So as often happens on a Sunday morning, I find myself with more than one thing that I'd like to talk about. A congregant in a church I served several years ago called it my effort to fit 10 pounds of rice into a 5-pound bag. He said it was always my inclination, so much to say, so little time. The trick becomes finding a connection between the topics that makes sense so that things flow together. So most of you are probably aware, and especially those of us who were at the fellowship dinner last night, that today is Pledge Drive Sunday. It's the beginning of our pledge season, marking what is the beginning of the annual fundraising on behalf of this congregation. This is a really important topic. Your pledging decisions determine what Theodore Parker Church can do and be for our future. And then some of you may be aware that this is the first Sunday of the UUA-sponsored Commit to Respond initiative, asking us as individuals, as congregations, and organizations to commit to take action against climate change in each of three ways: to shift to a low-carbon future, to advance the human rights of affected communities, and to grow the climate justice movement. This is also a really important topic. Our commitment to this work contributes to the impact that Unitarian Universalists can have on the future of our planet. Between the two, I think I can have us out of here no later than 12:30. Okay. Excellent. I got started a little early, just in case. So here's the deal, and lucky for me, that I don't have to look too hard. These two topics are connected. What we do with our individual and collective resources is connected to everything. Where we put our energy and our money identifies what our priorities are. Put another way, we choose where to put our energy and our money based on what feeds our souls. I went to a worship service years ago at a place called Church Island on Squam Lake. It's this bucolic setting. It's an outdoor chapel open to the sky with a view of this lovely, serene, loon-rich lake in New Hampshire. It might not surprise you that the attendees are generally people of means because you have to get there by boat. The minister preaching that morning was a tall, gravelly-voiced man, sort of hunched over and really big in the pulpit. He challenged the gathered to go home and look at their credit card statements. He was preaching from Matthew, verse 6, chapter 24. Anyone? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. So for our that was Jesus speaking, by the way. For our purposes, we might think of this scripture verse as suggesting that in our hearts, where we make choices about who or what we love, who or what is important to us, we are either oriented towards our own needs, money or the things that money provides and its accumulation, or oriented to the needs of the greater good, represented perhaps by God, by spirit, by that which is bigger than our individual selves, that which unites us. The verse suggests that the two are mutually exclusive, that our inclinations go one way or the other. You cannot serve both the greater good and personal wealth, as the flow of money distorts one's judgment, potentially. So as it happens, whether we agree with that or not is conversation for another day, but as it happens, two of my nephews were there that Sunday, and after the service, they shared with me their shock and dismay that the minister had talked about money at a church service, and more than that, had instructed everyone to look at their credit card statements. What business was that of the preachers to begin with, and what did that have to do with religion anyway? Money, of course, is just a kind of currency. It's a form of exchange, right? It represents resources or access to resources. the reality of our living, unless you are the Buddha or a seriously committed spiritual seeker who has given up attachment to the material things of this world, which is what Jesus was suggesting as well, by the way. The reality of our survival has to do with resources, whether we have enough to be safe. Do we have a roof over our heads? Do we have food in our bellies? Do we have clothing on our bodies? Do we have those things for the people we love? Do we have enough to be safe so that we can go on living? These are basic survival needs. Sometime in the far distant past, we might have bartered for our needs. And if we found ourselves with a resource like a cow, for example, we might have been able to relax a bit, since we would know at least where some of our sustenance was coming from, and that we could trade some of our resources for whatever we didn't have immediate access to. I'll give you milk, you'll give me blankets. And then commerce begins, and you don't have blankets, but you have change, and I can sell you my milk and use the change to buy blankets from the blanket maker. And so it begins. Our community grows. And the tension between my ability to provide for myself versus my willingness to help those who can't increases, because now I have more things to take care of, like my cow, for instance. And the affairs of my heart become a bigger question because we're moving beyond mere survival. What will my choices be with my resources? How does my cow give me a leg up on my own security or the security of others? How is my cow a burden to care for? And how does the cow itself require resources I might otherwise not have needed? I tried to get my nephews to see the credit card statement as simply an extension of this exchanging of resources, a snapshot, really, of the trading that we use to structure our lives, and thus an indication of what's important to us. Most of us are fortunate enough to at least be beyond basic survival. So then, where is our heart on this month's credit card statement? Because if I'm lucky enough to have a cow, whatever that represents in current form, a bike, a car, a house, I have choices. I could give you some milk if you needed it, or not. So let's fast forward from our rudimentary example to a more complicated world, the world of multiple credit cards and iPhones and jet planes and international commerce and walk-in closets and stuff, lots of stuff, and carbon emissions and fracking and too many guns and too much violence and hunger and narcissism and indifference. And the credit card statement for the world looks too full of self-interest and service to money, and not enough to each other, let alone our construct of the holy, and certainly not enough for the future of this fragile planet. Our hearts hurt. We come together to help each other manage our confusion, to try to understand and to support each other in our abilities to do better with this imbalance that is our living, this inner tug of war between caring for self and other. We gather to try to be grateful for the good, but also to avoid feeling so out of control. We try to help each other. We try to teach our children that there is a better way and what that might look like. French social critic Marc Augue suggests that we are in a time he calls supermodernity, experiencing a crisis in social relations. We have a plethora, he says, of non-places where people exist without relationship. Perhaps our dwindling sense of neighborhood is such a place, or the omnipresent world of social media. We live side by side and sometimes barely know each other, like toddlers at parallel play. And at the same time, we have a superabundance, he says, of things and opportunities with little or no reflection attached. Religious community like this one, that focuses on welcome and connection offers an alternative to that, perhaps an antidote to the world he described. It's all about relationship. It's all about reflection. Religious community like this one is about offering hope that life is more than meets the eye and that we can make choices that benefit all. Peter Stenke in the book A Door Set Open suggests that religion contains a vision of the universe moving towards renewal, where the human longing for peace, community, and justice find renewal. How badly we all need that. A compass to reset our directions, a reminder of what we need beyond resources to not just survive, but thrive as human beings, as a human family. Several weeks ago, I referenced a saying that a friend shared with me, when you own a cow, the cow owns you, which is why there's a cow on the front of the order of service, of course. I think maybe that depends on how we view the possibilities that our cow represents. This building, these buildings, might be considered the Theodore Parker Church cow. They are not the heart of who you are. You are all that. We are all that together. But they're the physical resource for gathering, for holding our history, for housing our work, for locating our commitment. And sometimes it may feel that the cow owns us, that all the tangible costs of maintaining a community become daunting. Add to that the things that complete the total, staffing your church and funding its work. It's a lot to be responsible for. But then we stop and think about what it represents. It represents hope in this world. A concrete invitation, Stenke says, to act in adventurous ways. This congregation represents an alternative to the isolation of the supermodern time that we live in. This community represents the blueprint for living that Peter Mayer offered, built stone by inspired stone, on a cornerstone of love. It represents the possibility of hope over fear, for surely our world is a fearful place these days. How many places in your life do you get to help build and sustain such an alternative, to care for such an endearing and important resource? In the book Sabbath Sense that I mentioned in this week's e-news, the author quotes a Yiddish proverb: the worst thing to carry is having nothing to carry. The worst thing to carry is having nothing to carry. This is our treasure and the gathering place to rally support for the things we know we do better together than apart. Like taking action against climate change, like raising awareness of its threat to our Earth, acting in ways that will leave the planet better off than when we came. And aren't we responsible for that? I'm reminded of the indigenous people's seventh generation principle, that we should be keeping in mind the seven generations that will follow us. This is both our opportunity and our responsibility. What a privilege. What a gift. This cow that we own gives us place and people and possibility. It is an opportunity for what Nancy Schaefer calls unplanned enchantment. Here we can be in love with the world again and find hope that will sustain our days. Here we find connections and support for the priorities we know we value together, not least the commitment to respond to our Earth's needs. Here, we do not serve money as master, but use it to work towards the greater good. And that is worth every penny we can pledge. We have important work to do together, for ourselves, for our children, for our community, for our world, and there is no time like the present. In fact, there is no time but the present. Let's commit to respond to our climate crisis. Let's pledge as well to make this church a place of hope and action for a world desperately in need.